Hi, and welcome to the Mark Hashik Show on Roadkill Radio. I'm Mark Hashik. Our first issue today, the Missing Women Commission of Inquiry began 2 weeks ago in Vancouver. The inquiry is looking at the situation involving Robert Willie Picton, the worst serial killer in Canadian history. For roughly 7 years, they think, Mr. Picton hunted in the downtown east side in Vancouver and essentially abducted women through luring them with drugs and whatnot, and murdered them in the most brutal fashion on his pig farm outside of Vancouver in a suburb. This has had a profound effect on Vancouver, on the neighborhood, on women, on the Aboriginal community in the downtown east side, and the inquiry purportedly was to come up with solutions. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. My first guest is Laura Holland. She's a member of the Aboriginal Women's Action Network, which represents Aboriginal women in the downtown east side in Vancouver and advocates on behalf of them. Laura, thank you for joining us here on Roadkill Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about your involvement first in the neighborhood. I believe that you started doing work in the neighborhood in the early 1990s. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. The Aboriginal Women's Action Network was actually formed in 1995. But before that, I had done some volunteer work in the downtown east side. Mm-hmm. And I'd also been involved in some creating some programs for women and children. And one of the things that was always really clear to us was that women were being harmed.
Right.
And we tried our hardest to pay particular attention to what was happening to women, what was happening to their daughters, and what was happening to us as women in general. And I think when we, you know, look back at that time, we have to remember that there was some really extreme and drastic cuts that were happening to programs and services of all sorts all over the province. And, of course, that really affected things that were, you know, programs that were happening in the downtown east side, too.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that in a second. Now, I want you to tell me what your involvement has been with the commission. Have you attended any of the hearings?
I haven't so far. I've been outside of the commission. Yeah. I have been with women on the street who were denied funding for legal representation.
Now, so just for the benefit of our listeners who don't know, many groups, many women's groups, wanted to participate in the hearings, which seems logical to me because these were the people that were affected by Picton. But because they were not funded by the provincial government, they were essentially barred from the inquiry, whereas we have the province and the Vancouver Police Department represented by with high-priced lawyers. So this has been a big problem, and for some people, the inquiry is obsolete at this point in time because they don't believe, without the participation of these women's groups, that you can come up with solutions, which is what this should be about. So you're in solidarity with those groups outside looking in right now.
Absolutely. We want to make it really clear. We want to have a presence in the street, you know, to make it really clear to the public and to society that we basically are locked out. We're basically, as you said, banned or barred.
Now, before we get into what was going on during Picton, what is your biggest beef with the hearings right now, other than the fact that all these people are disqualified from the hearings? Are you seeing anything good right now coming from the hearings?
Well, I think that without an Aboriginal women's lens, without our voice as A1, who we hear from women who do not talk to rape crisis centers, we hear from women who do not talk to women's organizations, who don't go to the hospital, who don't go to police. We hear from these women all the time. We speak to these women regularly, and they tell us what has happened to them, what is happening in their lives. So we think it's really important that our voices should have been heard as well. So what we believe is that whatever outcome this inquiry has is probably going to be more dangerous.
I couldn't agree more with you, and we're going to touch on that in a second. Now, take me back. Now we're going back to the 1990s. Some of the best estimates by police are that Picton was active in the downtown east side between 96 and 2002. That's kind of the dates that I've seen. Can you tell us what the mood was on the street back then, particularly in the later years, 99, 2000, 2001? People knew something was going on, right?
Oh, absolutely. Women and women's families were totally distressed and outraged and just in a place of panic. And that was sometimes the feeling that I had that was the mood on the street, because they were doing their best. They were doing everything they could to talk to police. They were doing everything that they could to make their stories heard, and they were being ignored by the very people who were there to protect them.
Did you know anyone who fell victim to Picton? Personally?
Yes.
Yeah, almost.
And what I can say also is women who are in the A1 collective were also very close to some of the women that were killed by Picton. And even today, that's still something that's really hard for them to live with. And these are women that, either lived in the same building as them or worked on the streets with them or used same programs as them. And they got to know each other really well. And these were our friends. These were daughters. These were mothers.
Right. Laura, you mentioned about the police response to complaints during that time. Give me a few main reasons why, in your opinion, Picton was able to do what he did for so long.
Well, what I know is that at that time, there was very little resources for women. There was a lot that was happening, from the provincial government at that time. And there were cuts to programs and services. There were slashes to health care, social services, child care. And there was no way that the police and the public could not know what effect this would have on women.
Right.
It was the BC government at that time that constructed that increase of level
right.
of vulnerability of women.
Right.
And when women have no access to education or there's really no escape from poverty. And especially at that time when I think the ministry allowed $510 per month for rent for a mother of single,
right.
a single mother of two children. So, of course, prostitution, despite the dehumanizing effects of those acts, it becomes very tempting. And so we say that it's not a real choice at all.
No. People's idea of choice varies on your situation, and that's something a lot of people don't understand. But I think, with all due respect, you're being very diplomatic. I'll give you a couple of explanations, in my opinion, why Picton was able to do what he did for so long, because he targeted a poor population that doesn't have political clout, doesn't have any real say in the way things happen in our society, and many of the women, as you know, were Aboriginal. That's why that is a main reason why Picton was if Picton was active in, say, Maple Ridge, or God forbid, somewhere on the west side of Vancouver, he might have been picked up a lot quicker. I firmly believe that.
Absolutely. And this is why I was saying that the public and police departments, couldn't possibly, there's no way that they didn't know how these cuts had effect on women.
Okay,
these women, my sisters were labeled as addicts and labeled as prostitutes and were therefore not credible witnesses,
right.
And they were instead deemed as disposable or dispensable and mattered very little to them.
The police obviously failed to keep women safe from Picton, and women continue to face violence from pimps and Johns in the neighborhood. What do you want police to do? What changes do you want to see? Now, you've talked about funding, targeting funding towards women for housing and that type of thing. What more do you want to see in law enforcement and police behavior in the downtown east side?
Well, what we know right now is that women are being charged less with prostitution charges. And we think that that is a great move and a great step in the right direction. But what we do want to see is the Johns and the pimps become charged and criminalized for their acts. We want to see Vancouver and BC and Canada move towards the Nordic model of prostitution law.
Right, which I support as well. And for people that don't know, the Nordic model criminalizes demand. It goes after the Johns and the pimps, but is essentially decriminalizes the women. It doesn't go after the women because they are the victims in prostitution.
Yeah, and, you know, we can say victims or women in prostitution.
Sure.
Either way, we just know that we want women protected.
Right.
And there's absolutely no reason that we can't stand with the women who are on the street and oppose the violence that's happening against them. There's absolutely no reason that we shouldn't do that.
No,
this is something that we come up against quite often as an organization, is that we are, you know, blamed and, you know, said that we are against women who are prostituted,
yeah.
And that's totally not true, because we are talking about people that we care about.
Yeah.
We are talking about sisters that we have loved and known most of our lives, if not all our lives.
Yeah. No, and you make a great point, Laura, that Robert Picton, while a serial killer, was also a John. He was a John first before he became a killer, and that's a great point. To wrap it up, back to the Missing Women Commission of Inquiry. The greatest tragedy to me about this investigation is that because women's groups aren't involved, because you don't have all the voices necessary to come to create solutions, history is bound to repeat itself. If we don't come up with, if anything good could come out of the Picton horror, it would be that we would craft public policy to better protect the most vulnerable among us. And I don't think that's going to happen out of this inquiry. I'm sad to say. Your final word on the inquiry, Laura, before we wrap it up.
Well, I think that we really need to look at the language first. It's called a missing women's inquiry. At one time, those women were missing. But what we're really talking about is murdered women.
Not a good point.
Why are we not calling it a murdered women's inquiry? I think that we need to be really clear. I think we need to be really clear on what we're talking about. We're talking about male violence against women.
Right.
We're talking about male violence against a particular group of women that society and the public deem dispensable or disposable. And the truth is, we're not. Because not all women in the downtown east side, across BC or across Canada, are prostituted or drug addicted.
Right.
We're talking about children as well. We're talking about girls that have gone missing. And what we do know is that not a lot has changed. Since Picton, we've had perpetrators like Martin Tremblay, who has been out in the community,
right,
and who's been able to act without any sort of, with impunity.
Yeah.
And it's taken a lot of pressure from women's groups for them to act.
Well, I hope you guys keep up the pressure. I hope you stay in the debate. And unfortunately, from my perspective, this inquiry is really a sham. It's boiled down to the Vancouver Police Department and the provincial government covering their butts, so to speak. And that's
Absolutely.
Not what this inquiry should be all about. Laura, Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Laura Holland. I'm Mark Hashik. Thank you for joining us here on Roadkill Radio. See you next time.